with Glenn. Pray you'll anoint him to speak to us and share with us about Generous Space. Amen.
Okay, so can you see this beautiful clock here? This belongs to Barbara. When you transport it anywhere, like I just did today, it makes jangly noises because the bells inside it that make it a chime. I said chiming. And it still works twice a day because it's at 3 o'clock. But apart from that, it's not working until somebody fixes it. It's really interesting. I've been looking at time today. Can you put the next one? And before clocks, people would measure time where the sun was in the sky. So you had the next one. So you had this sunrise and then sunset, and that was how people measured time. And the Gregorian calendar, which is the calendar that we use now, was first introduced in 1582 to make up for the inaccuracies. Basically, the one that they'd used before that was the Julian calendar, and that was basically wrong, so they had to change it. It was about 10 days out of date, so they basically had to have 10 days skipped. Can you imagine having to do that? Like, suddenly one day everyone decides that they need to change. Okay, we're going to skip 10 days to make up the mistakes we've been making. In August, I go to Ethiopia. Can you do the next one? And this is the Ethiopian calendar. Now, Ethiopia and Eritrea follow a 13-month calendar, and it's 7 years behind the rest of the world. Okay, next one. The Buddhist Thai calendar is Cambodian. It's currently the year 2566. In Nepal, it's 2080. Then the Islamic Hijra calendar is 1444-5. The Persian calendar in Afghanistan, Iran, is 1402. And North Korea, the Jewish calendar is 112. And the Chinese calendar is the year of the rabbit. Isn't that interesting? All these different times. So not everybody goes by the Christian calendar. Time seems to be stretchy, doesn't it? It's like we can hardly believe it's more than halfway through the year already. It's crazy, isn't it? But then on the other hand, the church weekend seemed ages ago now, doesn't it? It's like it just quickly goes. So time seems to be unchangeable, and yet time in space is different from time on Earth. So do you know, I'm just wondering whether the professor in astrophysics is here, because I don't want to be embarrassed if he's did you know that in the International Space Center the time goes at a different rate than it does on Earth? Isn't that incredible? My wife told this to me one time, and I was like, are you sure? Well, apparently it's like 2.5 seconds difference between now and when it was first put up there in 40 years ago. Really interesting. I can't explain to you how or why. The sun's light. How long does the sun's light take to get to Earth? Do you know that? Somebody's going to know that, aren't you? 8 minutes, that's right. And the star Polaris, which we refer to as the North Star, do you know how long that takes to get to us? Anyone? It's 680 light years away. So it takes 680 years to get to Earth. Incredible, isn't it? So Greenwich Mean Time, as it happens, hasn't been going on forever. It's another one of those things that started, there's a really interesting story about how it started. So before the introduction of the railways in the 1840s, there was no standardised time in Victorian Britain. Who'd have known? I mean, that's bizarre, isn't it? And the regions added by their own local time, which was reckoned by the sun. So the further west you went, the later your day started. So Bristol, for example, was just over 10 minutes behind London. I mean, who'd have thought? I had no idea it was quite so interesting. When train journeys began to link all the corners of Britain, then it all got a bit confusing because, you know, like, well, what time are we in now? So timetables needed to be drawn up using one standard time rather than the plethora of local ones. So Greenwich Mean Time was known as railway time and began to be adopted across Britain. Have you got the railway? Yes, good. In fact, actually, if you go on the Trans-Siberian Railway, which goes right the way across there, it crosses 8 time zones. So you have to keep changing your watch all the time. That would be amazing, wouldn't it? Apparently, it's a bit boring. It's a bit of a boring journey. But I'd still like to do it just for the fun. And then there's that whole thing about New Year's celebrations now where we see it, you know, if you watch it on telly, you can see it all the different times, starting with New Zealand and then throughout the day, throughout the calendar. So then there are units of time. Do you know that the largest unit of time is called a superion? And there are three eons, each being a billion years. And when we say, oh, it's eons, That's actually a unit of time. Isn't that amazing? A billion years. If the smallest unit of time is called a zeptosecond, and it's a trillionth of a billionth of a second, or a decimal point followed by 20 zeros and a one. Isn't that amazing? I mean, I know I'm really not a physics person, but I love all this stuff. It's really interesting. And do you know it's 176 days till Christmas? Isn't that exciting? So Ecclesiastes 3, there's a time for everything. I'll just read that. There's a little bit that goes after what was read. It says, what do workers gain from their toil? I've seen the burden God has laid on the human race. He's made everything beautiful in its time. He's also set eternity in the human heart, yet no one can fathom what God has done from beginning to end. I know that there's nothing better for people than to be happy and to do good while they live, that each of them may eat and drink and find satisfaction in all their toil. That is the gift of God. I know that everything God does will endure forever. Nothing can be added to it and nothing taken from it. God does it so that people will fear him. And sorry the Zambian group aren't here, but there's an African proverb and it says, you have the watches, but we have the time. That's a really good proverb, isn't it? Because sometimes we need to be reminded that, you know, sometimes we're so busy going according to the time and then we're not really understanding that it's people that are important and significant. So at Linden, we're co-creating a place of inclusion and equity, and that's irrespective of gender, ability, disability, age, sexuality, ethnicity. And we're also providing a place of sanctuary and shelter, irrespective of age, stage of life, past experiences, future experiences, all of those are, we just want to be a welcoming church. Do you remember Corrie ten Boom? She provided that incredible place for Jews. I mean, I don't know if it's so well known now, but when I was a lad, it was the book that you had to read if you were a Christian, you know, The Hiding Place. And it was an extraordinary story about this woman and her sister who hid Jews behind that bookcase and in the wall there, provided sanctuary for them. And, you know, we may not have to do something quite where there's such a terrifying regime in this country at this time, but we don't know. In the future, we may have to. We may have to do that. And there are people who still, the way that people that refugees are being treated, increasingly more hostile. There may be things that we need to do in the future that are providing a welcome and maybe putting ourselves a little bit at risk. In the Old Testament biblical story, there's the two spies who received sanctuary and shelter in Joshua 2. So they were sent by Joshua, who went to the house of Rahab. Rahab was a prostitute. Incidentally, she's included in the genealogy of Jesus, which is incredible. And it's a reminder to be open to the possibility that we might receive help or word from someone we least expect. You know, isn't that, that's really important, isn't it? You know, as I was walking here this morning, I walked in through West Cross, and there's a group of guys that hang out there, and they said, "Oh, hello, Glenn, and are you going off to church?" And I said, "Yes, actually, I'm speaking today at church," and I was like, hoping that they might want to come along, but because they know that when I'm not with Wally, I'm going to church, because Wally's my dog. And so they were, and I just thought, how interesting. And then one of them said to me, "So what's the, why do you think the world's in the state it's in at the moment?" And I'm like, "I'm going to church. I'm really sorry, I can't talk about it just a minute, but I promise I'm going to try and come back and sit down with you and talk about it." Not that I've got the answers or anything, but yeah. So I always think we need to look at Jesus as the model from what we do and how we do it. Jesus had a limited amount of time. Basically, Jesus was confined to a particular time and a particular place. There was so much to do, but he found time to be with God. And he also had time to party and fish with his friends and sleep. And you can see here, I know it's kind of the Last Supper with disco lights. I'm sure it wasn't quite like that, but it was, you know, Jesus did enjoy a party. We know that because he, you know, with the wine and the, you know, he made the water into wine and everything, and at a particular time. And I'm sure that he got a lot of requests to repeat that miracle, but probably the fact is that he was, you know, that was part of, he knew that was an important part of life. At the wedding feast. So Andy reminded us about how, about finding time to be with God. And I think we know that Jesus spent 30 years on earth preparing for his years of ministry before he got into the ministry. So that was, you know, that was a significant, important time. That was his childhood. We don't know much about his childhood. We only know little snippets of it. But, you know, we can imagine him working with his dad in the carpenter shop and learning skills there and learning about dealing with people and so on. And much of the rest of the time, his ministry modeled and spoke to those who felt excluded and needed to find safety and sanctuary. There was the woman at the well. There was the widow's son who was restored to life. And there was the story of the woman about to be stoned. And Zacchaeus. All of those were important times when Jesus spoke into the lives of people who were excluded by others. And he reminded us in the parable of the 100 sheep that he would look for the most excluded one, and the prodigal son that he would always be welcome, the one who returned to him. There's a story of Lazarus and the man healed by the pool who'd been there for many, many years. There was the woman with the issue of blood, that she was bleeding, and she'd been bleeding for many, many years. Those stories are stories where the timing seemed awful, They were just, why would, you know, they'd waited so long. And yet it was perfect timing because Jesus was there and he did it. And then there's the story of the thief on the cross when Jesus said, today you'll be with me in paradise, which seemed awfully unfair, really, when everybody, when he'd been a thief all his life and then, you know, at the last minute, he suddenly gets into heaven. That seems a bit unfair, doesn't it? It's good to be reminded of the history of mercy by people of faith in our own area. Do you know, there's the leper's window in St. Mary's Church in Rossilli, which you can just see it, faintly see it. It's faded, but you know, it's an amazing thought to think that the lepers were, you know, leprosy was common, and yet the church was reached out in mercy and allowed lepers to see the service going on in the church, even though they couldn't come into the church, they were allowed to see that, and that somebody had made that special. And that's, you know, just down the road from us. And on the site of the hospital of the Blessed David in Cross, is basically in Swansea, there stands a hostelry named as the Cross Keys Inn. Henry de Gower, charterer of foundation and endowment of his hospital at Swansea, dated 1332, and established a hospital for blind, decrepit, or infirm priests and other poor men. And it's still there. It has a slightly different I use these days, but still, it's still there. And it's another reminder that you know, mercy didn't start with Linden Church. Actually, it's been happening for a long time. And we're building on those before who had heart for mercy and reaching out to the most vulnerable. Other cultures, such as First Nation people, think about several generations before and several generations after them. So they honour their ancestors and consider the impact of the decisions for many generations ahead. So different from the way that we work here, with politicians only thinking about 4 years ahead, because that's when they get, that's when they're re-voted. So what is the legacy and long-term hopes that we want to see for Linden? Well, let's remind ourselves again what we want to do is co-creating a place of inclusion and equity, irrespective of gender, ability, disability, age, sexuality, ethnicity, mental health. And we want to encourage people to come as you are, a place where some can sit, some can walk and others can run. You know, it's not possible for all of us to be doing everything. We have a part. We're made part of the body of Christ. And some of us will be doing things that are that may appear to be very significant. And others of us, you know, may just be smiling at somebody or making someone feel comfortable or just checking out that they're okay. It's all significant and important. What about your legacy? What's your legacy going to be? How can you use the time that you have in the best way to get a balance between caring for our family and our community, our work and ourselves? In terms of legacy, what you leave behind is not what is engraved in stone monuments, but what's woven into the hearts of others. Okay, next one, please. So this is something. So I have this autoimmune disease. It's called sarcoidosis, and it affects me in the sense that it makes me very fatigued. And some weeks I'm much better, and other weeks not so good. One of the things that I was told to do that could be useful is to think about 10 bottles. So every day you have 10 bottles of energy. And then, so you have to think about how you're going to use those 10 bottles. you know, if you're a mum, then you're using up 9 buckles already just by being a mum, and all the things that you have to do. But all of us have got 10 buckles, and those buckles maybe have varying degrees of stuff in them. Some of them are will be full, you know, because you've got lots of energy, and others maybe not so much. But what I find is that sometimes I use 11 or 12 buckles in a day, and I get completely exhausted, and then I don't have so many buckles the next day. And sometimes, you know, I actually, by having really resting one day, that means I can have more energy for the rest of the week. So there, but it's a way of like kind of like assessing how much time that we have in order to that we can give and to other people. What is God's promise to us for the future? Revelations 21, verse 3, 4, 5 is, "And I heard a loud voice from the throne saying, 'Look, God's dwelling place is now among the people, and he will dwell with them. They will be his people, and God himself will be with them and be their God. He will wipe every tear from their eyes. There will be no more death or mourning or crying or pain, for the old order of things has passed away.' He who was seated on the throne said, 'I am making everything new.' Then he said, 'Write this down, for these words are trustworthy and true.'" So we don't know what's happening tomorrow. We don't know, but we do know that in the end, it's going to be made right. And that's kind of really reassuring, isn't it? Especially for those of us who've been through really hard stuff. I don't really understand, you know, I have to confess, I don't understand God's timing sometimes. You know, I don't understand why Siobhan was taken from me a few years ago. Why then? Why her? And then there's other times, and I think, you know, the things that have come from that I've been able to say, you know, thank you, Lord, for the opportunities that I've had. And then there's other things like, you know, my health. I feel like, well, Lord, I could do so much more if I had more energy and more more energy to do it. And yet I feel, no, this is, I have to believe that God's given me what he's given me, and I need to use that within the time I have available. So let's be encouraging to each other. Think about the way we use our time every day, and think about our legacy for the future, both for the church and for us as individuals. Okay, thanks.